Passwords are great until they're not. Tetris, the game, is under attack, along with all the other Russian software. And Google's large language models are now infinite. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the April 16th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. My name is Tony Francisco, and I am joined by my amazing co-host again, Tom Lawrence. Tom, how are you doing today? Look, you see, we're like right here, but this is as close as we can touch. It's like,
I think that works, yeah.
So how are you? It's the day after tax, like the final
yeah.
day of taxes here in the US. How are you feeling?
I feel a little lighter in the wallet.
That was funny. You know what we should probably do, though? We should probably jump into some, what's that called again?
News.
Let's do it. Let's get in the news. In my first story from Becky Bracken at darkreading.com, Sisense password breach triggers ominous CISA warning. The U.S. federal government issued a password compromise warning to Sisense customers, advising them to reset their credentials immediately. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that's CISA, also advised users to reset platform credentials and passwords for any sensitive data accessed through Sisense services. According to Patrick Tiquette of Keeper Security, Sisense is susceptible to supply chain cyber attacks, potentially enabling attackers to infiltrate customers' networks. The urgency of CISA's response indicates the severity of the situation, with experts cautioning about the increasing threat of supply chain attacks. Recommendations include password resets and scrutiny of API password keys to mitigate potential security risks. As of reporting, Sisense has not responded to our inquiries. Tom, let's talk about this for a moment. What are your thoughts on the response or lack of response from Sisense and the response from CISA? Tell me about this. I really want your input.
Yeah, let's say, so CISA says Sisense isn't secure and they're being silent on the matter. I think we have a little bit of a tongue twister.
You too, were you killing me with this?
I know, it's a lot to say.
Sally sells seashores on the, okay.
Seashells
on the seashore. Okay, so but what are your-
If more security.
Without security. What are your thoughts though on CISA's involvement? Because this is almost, let's be blunt, two years ago, that didn't happen. And now it's happening. Is that something that you appreciate? Is that something that terrifies you? Is that something that we should apply more structure or formality to? What are your thoughts?
I like to see more CISA involvement in these things because we need to be more vigilant, and having an organization that can kind of point the direction and say, this is a serious one versus this is not so serious. News versus noise. Every day there's a ransomware thing that happens. Which ones are newsworthy? Which ones are just noise? Is something we try to determine here on the channel, but it's also something that we need some governing bodies who have a little bit of inside information, can properly disseminate that information and say, no, this particular attack means more of a threat. And this is the challenge. Let's even expand it out to something like patching, something CISA talks about a lot, is their, you know, actively exploited lists. Like, oh, there's everything you have to patch. In an ideal world, we would just patch everything like a light switch, but it doesn't get like a light switch. It's more like there's a million little switches and knobs, and about half of them are going to break when we patch. What is the most serious thing I should be thinking about right now? And CISA does help disseminate the information. So I really like their involvement and that they've stepped up as an agency to really help fill in this gap of protection. I think it's really overall a good thing. It's I want to know, does this actually affect me? Is it something that matters, or is this something that gets a headline because it was a popular business or service? And yeah, I'd say, hey, look, this person got popped. Yeah, but does that really affect me? Will it change my day any? These are the things that really need to know.
I've used the term, and we've got some private comments. I've used the term, hey, we're talking about a dehydrated water. It's like it, news, it's there, it's white noise, but is it really newsworthy? And there's a big difference. One of the real concerns I have is supply chain attacks. So supply chain attacks, for the edification of those who haven't been following every single one of our episodes, and we talk about this, it's attacking, an endpoint that you're going to hear about, a ransomware and exploitation. But what if the attackers go upstream to a component in that endpoint that is now touching many endpoints? And what if you go even further upstream to where now it is extraordinarily difficult to figure out which endpoints are being affected, because now that becomes white noise in itself, because you're depending on the independent research of all these endpoints to figure out if they're using this particular library or whatever it is that's way upstream. Supply chain attacks are terrifying to me. How would you recommend that we address this? Is this something that CISA should be involved in, that everybody should be researching, and then look at their current production if you're a vendor, or consumption if you are, in fact, one of the end customers?
Well, and this is where you have shared responsibility matrices. I need to know what vendors they're using, what vendors are involved, and upstream of this. This is one of the, you know, AT&T. AT&T says, well, we don't know, this data came from us or a vendor. And these are things we need to understand. What do you mean a vendor? My data goes into AT&T? Who else has that data? That's something I think should be part of the public knowledge, is an entire chain of command that should be published on any of these companies, because it is a collaboration when software is built or when services are put together. And we should understand deeply what all those connections are. So me as a consumer, I trust my data with Tony's services or some software Tony makes, but there obviously is several other vendors in there where you host the data. And I should be able to know and mitigate those risks, because I can say, look, I'm great, I'm with Tony, his data is great. Oh, Tony stored his data somewhere with a partner that wasn't doing a great job. So now my data wasn't as safe. And understanding that chain, because then you know how it affects you. So people should be able to understand, do I have data within this one company? And CISA starting at the top saying this company has been breached. We then should have a way to pull those strings and unwind, so we can say, where is my data? Where is the things that I'm touching, that the services that I'll affect? And obviously we have things like SBOM for software, so the software bill of materials, but go a step further with the shared vendor responsibility matrix. And then we understand where all my data or where all that responsibility lives. And then I can decide if it's news or noise and whether or not I'm affected.
I'll tell you this right now. I live and breathe by, if you can't explain it, you don't understand it. But once you understand something, the mechanics of it, which you just explained, you can now manage it.
Yeah.
You have just done an incredibly effective way of kind of explaining that there is a path to resolution. I think it all comes from, frankly, the top down, leadership, 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 which ironically goes into the next story, because leaders have the right to be defeated, but they do not have the right to be surprised. And I do believe the game Tetris is something our current administration, the Biden administration, is finding out they don't want to be defeated. They don't want to be surprised by it. Why don't you talk about it?
The Biden administration is set to issue an order to prevent U.S. companies and citizens from using Kaspersky software due to national security concerns. This move, expected to be finalized soon, will utilize Commerce Department powers, possibly prohibiting Kaspersky Labs from offering certain products and services within the U.S. While government agencies are already barred from using Kaspersky Labs, extending this restriction to private companies would be unprecedented. Commerce Department officials are weighing in the practicality and impact of such a regulation. Considering potential business disruptions, despite denying any unethical involvement with Russian government, Kaspersky Lab faces increased scrutiny over its ties to it. The impending action signals a shift in Commerce Department policy towards safeguarding national security. Still, officials aim to balance security concerns with minimizing adverse effects on Americans and business consumers. So banning Kaspersky, what do you think, Tony?
I got to be honest with you. I thought this was about banning Tetris, and I was angry, angry, angry. I'm pretty certain we got about 50% of our followers just on the story, just from Biden banning Tetris. Kaspersky, on the other hand, it's kind of been under attack for a while, and I have mixed emotions because it's kind of like, hey, listen, we're not going to, we're going to have cars made only in America. And we can't have anything outside of America. When in fact, it's like 51% of the car actually comes from, you know, from different parts of the world, everything from the transistor over here to the copper over there, to the steel, maybe part of it here, the components of the press to make the steel here, it comes from India. And you kind of look at it like that and you're like, it's literally impossible to make everything truly here in America. Consequently, Kaspersky is what? Is it solely made in Russia and it's completely black box and we have no testing of it? I don't know if that's the case. I think part of it has developers over there, part of them developers over here. And I think we're now getting hung up more on the name, that's topical representation, than the actual underpinnings. In the previous story, you mentioned the bomb, the build
S-bomb.
S-bomb, sorry. Can you define what does S-bomb stand for?
Software Bill of Materials.
Love that. Is that defined here? And are the processes defined? Is there an auditable process for that development cycle? Can somebody go back and look at that development cycle and say, here are the sprints, here's the ads, here's the testing that was done for each of these incremental sprints and the product releases? I don't know if that is being looked at any more than a domestic software here. So it's very difficult for me to say, yes, that's a good thing to ban Kaspersky. But in the same light, you should say, well, what about these other companies here, which may or may not have Eastern Bloc, if not Russian developers, but it's a Russian or a US-based company.
So, yes. So I want to start with, this has to be very carefully written. It's not just about banning Kaspersky, because we actually have constitutional and state laws that prohibit this. It is called Bill of Attainder. You may not write a bill that is to target a specific company. Specifically, this is one of those things that has come up before when other agencies in the government wanted to ban other software, maybe because of social media manipulations like TikTok. You can't just have a Bill of Attainder that targets a single company. More broadly so, it's hard to target overseas software because, like you said, there's a lot of components. But let's talk specifically about software that's not open source. And I think that is where this is going to come in. I think there's an opportunity where open source prevails, because if we can't see what's inside it, we can't understand the details of what went in there, how can we trust it? And this is an easy example. We recently had the whole XZ debacle, but we caught that early before it really made it into mainstream supply chain. But you look backwards at SolarWinds, where this occurred, and that's an American-based company. Software was inserted. Because of our lack of visibility, it was really, really hard to find. And once we start pushing everything towards open source, not that a thousand eyes is a guaranteed to find the problem, but it's a way that once we know there might be a problem or a specific place to look, or if this software is used in a critical area, that there are eyes that will look at that software, that will be able to unravel it. They will take and compile from source, look for repeatable builds, and verify and validate that the software we're using on the system is the same software, binary for binary, compatible builds, without any back doors in it. This is critical. And I think the way forward, it's one of the reasons I think we're going to see more open source, because it's a threat to your security if you can't see what software is running on there. And we're seeing this more and more. And I think that's where we're going to end up going with this. I also think the government has a little bit of an out for Kaspersky because of an incident that happened previously where, because, and he's the secret of all these different malware analysis companies, whether you like it or not, those tools on your computer, they don't analyze them on your computer all the time. If it's a really interesting sample, they upload them. Look at the policy of every single major vendor. And Kaspersky, by doing that, was able to pull some tools. You can dig back several years back when this happened. And I think that there's probably some people that are still feeling that, still a little sore that they had that on there, because those tools happen to be maybe tools that the NSA didn't want to upload it to Kaspersky. So there's a whole incident around that from several years ago, and I think this is some backlash for it. But how can you trust someone developing in a nation that doesn't have the same laws or freedoms as us, that is run by an authoritarian who can simply manipulate and put pressures in a very direct way on employees, staff, to insert something in there and face penalty of death for not doing it? That is not something we'd see in other more forward-thinking countries, but you know, that is a big thing to think about Kaspersky. We got to be careful about how we word it, because as I said, can't be bill of attainder, can't be targeted at a singular company. But there's a lot of considerations here. And I think what you do is you offer a way out is we can't accept closed source software from other countries. And I would like to see it. We can't accept closed source software from this country too. I mean, I'm an open source nut though. Been wearing that hat for a long time.
We have a lot to unpack on that. You know what we should probably do though? Let's talk about that. And we have a Discord. I'm certain we're going to get the open source versus black box. Yeah, exactly. But the good news is that there's a lot of very well-crafted opinions about this particular topic. And I do believe we all agree on the same thing. Safety, security, transparency is critical. And with that, the more processing power that we could have from all of us, maybe from an individual organization, the better. And what I'm going to do in my next story, I'm going to jump into it and talk about infinite level of processing. You ready?
Yep.
Let's do it. We're talking about infinite stuff and Google's got us covered. In a story from Ben Dixon at VentureBeat.com, Google's new technique gives large language models infinite context. In a recent paper, Google researchers introduced Infinity Attention, claiming it could enable large language models to produce text of any length. This is significant because LLMs, context windows, limit how many words it can handle at a time. If, for example, a conversation with ChatGPT goes beyond this limit, its performance drops and forgets earlier parts. Infinity Attention enables language models to extend their context window while maintaining memory and computing needs. It addresses the issue of transformer architecture's quadratic complexity that leads to significant increases in memory and processing time as the input size grows. In experiments, models using Infinity Attention maintain quality over 1 million tokens without extra memory, optimizing memory usage by storing old attention states to handle long and short-term context efficiently. And while it doesn't replace existing techniques like fine-tuning or retrieval-augmented generation, Infinity Attention makes it easier to develop applications without extensive engineering efforts. Tom, building something is easy. Evolving it, making it scale, it's almost impossible. And so what are your thoughts on this? Because we have a large language model, the framework, the structure, the intent, the context. It's amazing. Hey, great. Now make it better and make it scalable because everyone wants it. The latter, meaning scalable and better, wasn't considered in the beginning. So now we're moving into a completely different, is the juice worth the squeeze on creating a context framework that could offset the systemic framework that was initially created? What are your thoughts on this?
I think the challenge we really are facing right now is the hype. We've been telling everyone we're a month away. A month, another month, maybe another month away from my job being replaced and your job being replaced with AI, and we won't need this. We've got Super Bowl ads from Microsoft, and the reality is if you type in the words they had on a Super Bowl ad, you still don't get the outcome that you would expect from that. If we can get the context correct, that we even get it to tell me the right answer consistently and not face some of what they politely call hallucinations, or basically it spits back inaccurate data sometimes, this is the bigger problems we have. So I think the context is good that we can add a larger, you know, before it gets off topic, a larger amount of tokens to it. But the reality still is even the idea of chaining together agents together to try to have one AI that watches another AI to make sure it's not full of BS. And if it is, we got to have two more so we don't have a split brain problem so we can analyze it. At some point, I think we just need more money to solve it is what the people asking. And I think it's a stall tactic because I think there's some intractable problems we're really facing with AI where it goes this far, but it doesn't get that much better. I mean, we know the easiest way to visually, because us being visual people here, humans, we look at the images it generates and we can see the flaws easier. It's a lot harder in text. For example, if you ask it for a book summary on some text and go as far as asking for several quotes, it's kind of like one of those game where here's five truths and one lie. And because you'll realize like that quote is not from this book. And I've tried using it for things like that. I'm like, why does it just come up with an idea? It's one of those weird things where it just is occasionally just gives you confident wrong data, which there's nothing worse than confident wrong data, especially when you try to take this and present it. And we've seen a lot of flaws in this. But back to the visual, it gives you a better idea of what it gets wrong, how it's inconsistent in some areas. And I believe this is somewhat of an intractable problem because we are already feeding and building these LLMs with some of the largest models available. We're giving them YouTube, we're giving them Reddit, Wikipedia is included in all of them because it's the least controversial. And they still can't figure out how to do things. It's the way we're building it until there's a better breakthrough in the way. We're only seeing these really small incremental gains that aren't really gains. They're just like, oh, it can answer the question a little bit faster. It codes a little bit more accurate, but it still just sometimes does things wrong. It still sometimes tells you 1 + 1 = 4.
Well, do you think the framework is wrong? So just follow my theory here. My theory is we have come such a long way on large language models and what it can now do to have the response, that human-like response. We're not at the artificial general intelligence, nor are we at the artificial superintelligence yet. The advent of the involvement of quantum computing could create that, but we're at an AI appearance level. Is the model flawed, even though we got a taste of it, because it's unable to carry the context much longer and we're trying to create patchworks and twisty ties and band-aids to accommodate that? Do we have an inherited obligation to continue on this particular path? Or since we've seen, we've touched it, we've tasted what we could do, create an entirely new model to maybe evolve what is currently there to give us the same end result, but in a better format? Am I reaching too far there?
I think it's buying into some of the hype. The people who are really hyping it up, their goal is always to make their stock go up and to the right. So, and they're supposed to get money from investors. I'm not bound by such rules. So I can look at it more objectively and say, what has it done for me? What are the tools that I've played with and access to? And I got to admit, Google's is really good. Has it really solved the problem? And a lot of times it's solved it in a very mediocre way. And it's kind of crazy. I have something that can do transcripts of my videos that someone spent several $1 billion on. I'm like, that, and by the way, it still doesn't do them great. It still has a lot of flaws. And I'm like, still doesn't think about how many billions of dollars was spent on this, and it still does an okay job. I can nearly pay someone a few dollars, and they would get it more right than this thing does.
And how many times have you and I gone through that? Like, I don't want to pay $19 a month for this thing, right? when we don't calculate the billions of dollars spent on this.
Yeah. For a mediocre solution. I think there's still some fundamental flaws. I think it's still overhyped and we need to take a more objective look at it. That's where I stand today. I'm not someone who's not into the technology or not into new things. I just try to see through the hype and figure out what kind of bubble is AI and where is it at? Where are we at on that bubble?
You know what? I would love to hear from the MSP community. I love the private messages we get. Put the comments in YouTube. We have a Discord server. We're going to give you the address later on. I would love to hear from all of you. Where are we? Where did you think we were? I'd like to point out that here in MSP Dispatch, not long ago, we were talking about something, what's it called? ChatGPT. No one knew what it was. Then boom, it exploded. Like, I was playing with it months before my friends heard about this. And now it is such, it's such commonplace. I would love to hear from everyone. What do you think about it? What do you like? What don't you like? Where do you think this is going? But in the meantime, we've covered some great stories, and I think we've got some notables. You want to do them?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Apple warns users in 150 countries of mercenary spyware attacks. From our friends over at Dark Reading, Apple updated its spyware threat notification system to alert and aid users targeted by mercenary spyware attacks. Once spyware is detected, Apple will notify the users within 2 days. Although the company does not disclose the threat actor attribution, it did, however, single out the NSO Group, a prominent developer of its Pegasus spyware, in its advisory. On the same notice, Apple reminded its users that its alerts never include links or app installation requests. To date, Apple has alerted users in over 150 countries about being targeted by such attacks. In Microsoft's Windows 11 beta, Windows users may start seeing ads in the Start menu. We have an article over here from Engadget. Microsoft is considering introducing ads into the Start menu for Windows 11, particularly in the recommended software section where you typically find app suggestions from the Microsoft Store. While this may feel familiar for Windows 10 users where ads are already present, Microsoft plans to limit these ads to US users who are Windows insiders in the beta channel. However, the ads can be disabled by adjusting their settings under personalization. Given Microsoft's track record of integrating ads into its own platform, it's wise to know how to manage this feature, even though its widespread adoption is a little bit uncertain.
In my first notable mention from Kyle Wiggers at TechCrunch.com, OpenAI makes ChatGPT more direct and less verbose. Premium users of ChatGPT Plus, Team, or Enterprise now have access to an improved GPT-4 Turbo. This upgraded model offers better writing, math, logic, and coding skills, and an updated knowledge base. It's designed to provide clearer, more conversational responses, aiming to be more direct and less wordy. Following OpenAI's recent launch of new models, including GPT-4 Turbo with Vision, the ChatGPT update comes amidst a challenging week for the company. In my next notable mention, in a story from Anirban Sen from Reuters.com, software giant Salesforce is in advanced talks to buy Informatica. Salesforce, a major player in customer relations software, is in advanced discussions to buy Informatica, a provider of cloud-based data management services. The deal, reportedly below Informatica's current share price of $38.48 US, could be announced soon. Informatica, with over 5,000 active customers, including Unilever and Deloitte, was taken private in 2015 for about $5.3 billion US and later went public again. If the acquisition proceeds, it would mark Salesforce's largest deal since acquiring Slack Technologies for nearly $28 billion in 2020. In today's resource of the week, 9 ways to use AI to become a stronger writer. A story from Amanda Pressner at Inc.com. Discover 9 practical ways to better your writing using AI tools. From generating interview questions to refining your word choices, AI can streamline your content and create process. While AI is still improving in crafting content like humans, it's great at tasks such as idea generation, research, and summarization. So, whether you're seeking a fresh perspective, repurposing content, or just seeking feedback, AI can be a valuable resource. Check out the website link in the show notes below.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Beginning tomorrow the 17th and running through Thursday the 18th, an in-person event, ASCII Edge in Newark, New Jersey. And then also on the 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Huntress Fireside Chat, Cyber Insurance Office Hours. And then one more for you on Thursday the 18th, an in-person event, Enable Roadshow in Toronto. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, first up, tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, a new episode of AI Roundup. And then on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Tech Bar is back for another Ladies Night Takeover with special guest Desiree Thomas of Aportio. And of course, on the 19th at 11 a.m., that's Friday, another episode of MSP Community Live.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, please hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't, make sure you hit it an odd number of times so we get the benefit that you really liked it, but then you can inside just celebrate your anger. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we have a Discord where we post our stories all week long? You can even propose your own stories and vote on which ones we're going to cover. As our friend Rich Benke says, make sure you tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. And do you have any questions? You can email us anytime, news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or just call us and leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-NETWORK. Mr. Tom Laurent, it has been absolutely incredible seeing you today. The things you talk about with ease, by the way, I have to go back and listen to the podcast and then play it slow and then repeat it and then repeat it and then write it down. And then I repeat it later on another podcast interview or panel where I look so smart. I just want to say thank you so much for dispersing, distributing, and slowly drip feeding us all of the knowledge that you've acquired over the years. Do you want to close us up, land this plane for us?
Oh, you know, just as usual, like you said, like and subscribe, all those fun things. Check us out. Head over to our Discord. Feel free to tag me. I'm in there. If I just belong to too many Discords, but if you tag me, I generally respond. That's, I said yes to every Discord I was invited to for like a long time. There are regrets I have.
I am rethinking my decisions. To everyone out there, please, please, please stay educated and be safe. Take care, everyone.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
Passwords are great until they're not. Tetris, the game, is under attack, along with other Russian... I was choking in the middle of that. I just ate it. That was good. Yeah, I just ate half a bucket of KFC. I wish I was joking. And I'm like, I know. I was so hungry. I'm like, okay, ready? Let's go one more time.